Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me, as always, Mr. James Fox. How are you, James?
What's up, man? Doing well. How's it going?
I'm doing well, you know, watching some interesting playoff baseball, and despite the Hurricanes in Arizona, which is still blowing my mind, I watched three Desert Dog games, and there's some interesting stuff going on there, so we'll get into that in a little while. Everything good for you?
Yeah, all good. I'm off work tomorrow
for nice
Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day or whatever you want. You know, that's fine. No work, which means morning practice, which is fine with me because then it means I'm home in the afternoon. So
nice. Yeah, I have doctor stuff tomorrow, so not quite as exciting, but you know, hey.
That's what you do on Columbus Day. You schedule all your appointments when you know you're off. So your place of employ is closed?
No, absolutely not. 24/7, 365, baby.
That's what I thought. So you're just off. Okay.
Yeah, I took it off so I could go do that and get it taken care of.
Yeah.
So did you watch the Game 5 yesterday?
Some of it. Yeah.
Andrew Vaughn coming through in the clutch when it matters.
Off a righty, too.
Yeah. I can't say that I'm really shocked. It's kind of one of those things where he plays well against the Cubs, and that worked out nicely for us.
So our buddy Chris Lanuti, I think, had the best synopsis of, like, Andrew Vaughn. He said, like, you know, you see all these people who, like, are like, oh, they got rid of him and they shouldn't have or whatever. And he basically said that it's like – this ex-boyfriend or girlfriend that, like, that was just torturous, that, like, it was never going to work with you, and then, like, you find out down the road that it worked out with somebody else, you should just be happy and move on. Like, it was never going to happen here. So there's no reason to think that, you know, like, all of a sudden he was just going to be good somehow. Because honestly, like, he wasn't that good there. He's had some big hits. He had, like, that huge month. I'm honestly curious to see whether a team like the Brewers, like, tenders him a contract. And I know that sounds crazy, but, like, I mean, it's going to be like $6 million.
Yeah. If he helps lead them, I mean, to the World Series, I'm not saying he's going to, you know, do all that much to win, you know, like, the whole thing or whatever. But, you know, if he helps keep them going, it's a cheap option for them if that's, you know,
yeah,
the, you know, it's just, it's not going to cost them a lot. And
no, but
they
also didn't they trade out the Savali money for him though? Right. So it's kind of like, was a wash.
Yeah. Fair enough. I know, but I mean, you're talking arbitration, you know, like $5-6 million.
Right.
You know,
that's
I don't,
true.
I mean, what did they pay Rhys Hoskins? They paid him more than
that,
didn't they?
Yeah.
So, you know, they could conceivably come away with like an extra like $8 million over 2 years or whatever.
For sure.
Whatever.
If they signed him instead. I wonder if they think that he's good or if they know.
You know, I mean, well,
because they probably need a left-handed compliment, probably, for sure.
Yeah, it so would be can, good like, to have play him somebody
against lefties. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense. And from what we heard about his work ethic is that, you know, there was lack of want, you know, like lack of reason for him, he thought, to use analytics, and apparently there he started to listen a little bit more.
Yeah,
maybe that changes the arc of his career a little bit, you know. You know, so if you could manage to get, you know, like a 250 average out of him for a year and get like 20 home runs in that place up there, it would be worth it for, you know, $5-6 million.
Right. And I hope this starts to happen here with like Ryan Fuller and whoever they hire, but like, my understanding is like, if you play there and you chase like at the plate, you don't play. You just don't play. Like, you're going to chase, you're not going to play. So, you know, it's like pretty simple.
Yeah, that's fair. I enjoyed it. We were awarded with another PCA catch out in center field that was not meant to be. So that was, that kind of was funny for me.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, so after the first series, like, I had people dunking on me, of course, because that's what people do. It's fun. We can talk about this every week. You know, there were like some Cub fans that like thought it was stupid that I suggested that they should trade like top prospects for like a good pitcher at the deadline. Right. And I know other Cub fans agreed with me. I was, you know, like the who's the Mo Baller guy, Ballesteros. Like, yeah,
Moises Ballesteros. Yeah.
Like, when is he ever going to play for you? Like, if that's the headliner to get like a pitcher, like, I would have done that, right? And so then after they beat the Padres, people were like, oh yeah, you look at this Sox fan idiot with this take. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I think the take's still right. Like, they needed more pitching and they didn't get it. And it was like just a weird deadline. The other thing that's like really strange to me is like the amount of people in like fans and the media who seemingly like blame Craig Counsell for everything is like staggering to me. Like, I don't know if it's because he's like kind of arrogant or whatever, or he makes $8 million. But I mean, like, some of this stuff, it's like, yeah, like his team doesn't hit. What would you like him to do? Right. And I even understand the Michael Bush thing. Like, Michael Bush is really good. He also has an 81 WRC plus against lefties. So, like, if you're going to
maybe they
sit
signed
him, like,
Vaughn or something.
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, like, they played Michael, and then people are like, oh, well, why is it Justin Turner? I'm like, well, it's a 112 WRC plus against lefties. I mean, it's just like, it's defensible. You know, it's just like the Michael Bush numbers, he's awesome, but he's not the same guy against left-handed pitchers. So, like, just these little things, right? And then the pitching moves, there was just always a question. Like, I thought the general manager was more to blame than the manager.
Yeah, no, for sure. How much do you think is this not him having Walker McKinven around analyzing things for him?
I know. I mean, he also had like their current manager with him, right?
Yeah.
Pat Murphy.
Yeah. Yep.
But I mean, the Cubs bench coach right now, and I don't know a ton about Ryan Flaherty, but he might get one of these jobs.
Interesting. I'm actually kind of curious. You know, that was one thing that I didn't get to asking to anybody that I talked with at the podcast thing. Just because it didn't seem like there was never a time in the conversation where it seemed right. But I'm kind of curious as to everybody's thoughts on what Walker McKinven brought to the White Sox this past year.
Right. Yeah, that is an interesting question. I mean, yeah, I don't even know who to ask. Like, it's probably a Getz question because, I mean, obviously Venable's going to, you know, be positive. I mean, they'll all be positive because I'm guessing he helped. I mean, it does seem like they're... Well, one of the reasons why Drew Butera isn't going to be renewed is because like Walker McKinven just like kind of does that job. He's like the catching coach and the bench coach, you know? So yeah, he's like all this all the run prevention stuff is like him. I thought it was interesting too. I don't know who Will Venable talked to, but I heard him recently. And then there was like a James Fegan piece where he basically talked about how like he doesn't even make the lineup, Will Venable. There's like other people on staff that the lineup is like assigned to and they make it. And he wasn't really clear on like whose job that is. Like, that's like fascinating to me, because it's like, yeah, it's his name in the paper if like some guy stinks, you know what I mean? And I know like all these lineups are like optimized now where you're using your analytics staff and like all, you know what I mean? Like it's not like
synergy.
Like, yeah, like you're not just like closing the door of your office and writing out 1 through 9 anymore. Like, I get that, but it was just weird that he's like, oh yeah, I don't even do the lineup. It's like, okay.
Like, yeah. That whole thing to me is still kind of weirds me out. Like, but I understand why they're doing it the way they're doing it and why a lot of teams have moved to doing it that way. But yeah, it's still like, you think back, you're like, well, you're paying the manager to come in and do this stuff. But at this time, it's kind of seems like you're paying managers to run clubhouses and build culture, you know, and game time decisions when it's important, not necessarily, you know, the analytics of who should be in the starting lineup necessarily.
Yeah.
Mike, they don't have all those in their head, you know?
Yeah. Mike said the Dodgers Phillies ending was crazy, dude. Like, I feel so bad for that kid. Like that, like what, that he's like been really good all year too. And it's like, you know, me like Joe fan on the couch is like, hey, throw to first. But like, you know, yeah. even JT Realmuto was like literally pointing to first and he panicked and he threw home and they lost. And like, ugh. And like, I mean, that's like not the right city to do that in either.
Yeah. It's like the equivalent, us sitting on our couches is like the equivalent of like the little league dad in the stand saying, just throw strikes to their kid when he's pitching. You know?
Throw to first. I mean, duh. Like, yeah.
And I feel terrible for the guy. Like, he's going to have to scrub his timeline. You know, like his social media is all going to be gone. Like, there's, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's pretty rough. So, I guess we'll move to that one. The Dodgers Phillies series done in 4. Phillies just managed to scrape one out there. I don't know. The Dodgers just have a lot of firepower. I don't think there's really a whole lot. Like the Phillies also kind of look like I don't know. Harper wasn't hitting all that much. Seemed like all their big dogs were just kind of not. I mean, Schwarber obviously hitting bombs everywhere, which he's been doing. But everybody else, it seemed like there was no timely hitting. You know,
it's tough to do. And the Dodgers, like, everybody throws like a million miles an hour too. It's like their whole plan is like, it's like really hard to hit. And usually in the playoffs, like, the team who hits the most homers wins. The thing that's interesting now is like, I don't know how much it matters that the Brewers are 6-0 against the Dodgers in the regular season. We're about to find out, right? Like, it's like, oh yeah, congratulations. And then the Dodgers like win in 5 and it doesn't matter. Right. But, or maybe, you know, they have their number, you know, I'm the variance guy. So like, I'm just a firm believer in like, we have absolutely no idea what's going to happen and anybody can beat anybody. But it is interesting. The Dodgers haven't beat them all year.
Yeah. So as Howard brings up, the Hawkeroo either would have said, you've got to be bleeping me or else gone totally silent.
Oh, that's a silent one. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's the game ends like that. Hawk's just sitting there for 5 minutes while they show video.
You hear the headset hit the desk and then he's gone. And it's just Steve Stone sitting there like, it like takes it to break. Like, yeah, that's yikes.
So speaking of the Dodgers, Trey brings up this. Thanks for the super chat, Trey. We appreciate you. He says, thoughts on Munetaka Murakami?
I mean, I don't know.
Because we're talking about the Dodgers, so I might as well bring it up.
I don't know a ton about him other than, like, he's a Japanese batter that hits a bunch of dingers. I know that our Dylan is deathly afraid of the strikeouts or the strikeout rate. I really haven't dug enough to have an opinion one way or the other than, like, you know, I know that the White Sox are trying to build a presence in Asia. I also know that they need like lefty power and somebody that could play in the corners. So sure. If that's their target and they like landed a guy like that, awesome. That would be great. My thought is that they're probably not ready for something like that, but I also don't know like feasibly, like how much money is this guy going to get? I mean, first baseman, or even if like you think he can masquerade in right or left, like, these guys just like haven't gotten paid that much money, right? Like, so you know, is he a $100 million guy, or is he going to have to settle for like three at like 50 or something? You know, like, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. Seems to me that unless it's like a, you know, a very young guy, it seems like they have been a little bit more frugal as of late with Japanese imports.
Right.
But I mean, to get a guy like that on the White Sox.
Yeah.
Might be tough too.
Well, because even there's talk about Josh Naylor, right? And like he's not going to make that much either.
No,
like these guys aren't getting paid.
Yeah, you know. So I guess we'll move to the Seattle Detroit series here. I really dislike that guy.
Josh Naylor.
Yeah, I don't like his personality, but the guy's a gamer, and I can't dispute that.
He is a gamer, yes.
I don't know about bringing that guy into a clubhouse. I mean, he's already stabbed one teammate. I mean, I don't know. I just, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the move is. I mean, I could see like a Ryan O'Hurt, but like that's like a move that I would make, though. I would get a lefty first baseman. So I have a really difficult question, and Detroit fans are going to hate me, but I can wait if you want.
Yeah, well, are you talking about the Scooble thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that after this. Okay. What did you think of game five of Seattle Detroit, and how much of that did you watch?
So here's the thing. So I told you off air, we had a game Friday night. We beat Sandberg. Okay. Drive home from Orland Park to Lockport, drop off all of our stuff. Kids do their like dance party thing in the locker room. They finally go home. Me and a couple other coaches went to a local Lockport establishment after, because it's like one of the things that we do. And it is late, really late. And the game is like on. Like, like it's like in the 12th inning. So we're like sitting there with live baseball on. So yeah, I like sat there until it was over because the place was still open. So yeah, we like watched it happen. It was cool. There were literally people in the bar that I talked to that thought that they were watching a replay of a game. And I'm like, guys, it says right down there in the corner, 13th inning. Like, this is a actual baseball game.
Yeah. So I didn't watch from the beginning. I was hanging out here at the house. But then, a notification popped up on my phone and said, tied at 2 going into the 8th. And I was like, okay, cool. We'll see who can manage to score here and end it. And I was like, okay, cool. So I hopped in at the beginning of the 8th inning. 5 hours later, it's like it finally ended. I was like, oh my gosh, after 15, what felt like 15 double plays and just all sorts of traffic on the base pass, nobody able to get the important hit. The Mariners finally broke through. And yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. And you have to like start pitching, start throwing starters in the game, because you just like don't have enough players. You know, it was crazy. But yeah, I wasn't that sad. I don't, the Tigers or whatever.
Yeah, I saw some, you know, like I think I saw some of the Tigers fans on Twitter talking about who they wanted to pick up in free agency for next year, saying that they needed somebody that was going to get the big hit and, you know, in the important time. And two guys that were mentioned in that list were Polanco and Eugenio Suarez. And I was like, did you not just watch this series and watch those guys strike out in the most important times? I mean, I know the big hit came.
Yeah.
But we're talking the 14th inning, and like it took forever and like four or five at bats by said individuals to finally get that hit.
Yeah, Suarez like needs to go to a tiny ballpark.
Him playing in Seattle's tough.
He wasn't good the last time he was there either. Like, I understand trading for him, it's the best bat available, but like, you know, he just hasn't been that great.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, all right, so we got Blue Jays series, which was not really all that competitive at all.
No,
I mean, the Blue Jays, you know, the Yankees did manage to grab one there. Yankees didn't have the pitching. Yankees didn't have the hitting. Blue Jays had both. didn't work out well for the Yankees. Are you shocked at all?
No, not really. I mean, for them to win it, like, I thought a couple of their bats would have to, like, just go absolutely nuclear, and Toronto's good. So, no, not surprised. I mean, you know, it I don't think it's what Major League Baseball wants, you know, if it's, like, Milwaukee against one of those AL teams. Like, that's, you know, not really a viewer driver, right? But, you know, like, we're going to get what we get. They're probably hoping for the Dodgers at this point, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so. So let's go ahead and move to that.
Oh boy.
The Detroit Tigers they just lost in game 5. The only reason why they even made it to the playoffs, the only reason they even made it to the second round is Tarek Skubal. And they just had him for 10.15 this year.
Yeah.
Next year, it's being estimated that he's going to get 22.5 in arbitration.
Okay. Totally fine.
What is Detroit going to do with Skubal?
Right. Like, do you trade him? Because, like, I talked to some fans on Twitter, you know, and it's like, oh, they should just sign him. And look, agreed. Like, you know, like maybe I'm resigned to this fate as a White Sox fan. Like, you see these guys and you're just like, oh, they're trading him because, like, but it's not that easy, right? Like, even if they weren't cheap, right? Like, this Illich, like, isn't his father. Like, even if you wanted to sign him right now, like, with 1 year to go before free agency, like, is that even possible, right? Like, do you have to offer him $400 million? Like, what would he need to not get offers from other teams at this point? Like, it's just, you're too late in the game, I feel like. And I feel like I wasn't even, like, being a jerk online this time. I was just like, seriously, what do you do? Because, okay, fine, you keep him and you try to win next year, right? And then he walks as a free agent and you get, like, the 32nd pick in the draft when he leaves.
Yeah.
Or you trade him at next year's deadline, I guess. But, like, yes, Skubal is a Scott Boras client. So, like, there's just... You know, and people are like, oh, Boras has signed some guys. I'm like, yeah, occasionally, like, a guy will re-up, right? But not guys like this. Like, he's going to be the highest, you know, the biggest pitching deal ever. So what is that?
It's looking that way.
It's not Freed, right? Doesn't somebody have 300? Isn't it like Garrett Cole or somebody? I feel like somebody's gotten over 300.
Yeah, probably Garrett Cole.
And the Dodger pitcher, sounds too, right. Got over 300, right? Yamamoto, or I think he might have got like 325 or something crazy.
Was it that much?
So it was a lot. I know that. Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah, so that's what we're talking here. I mean, you're talking like 10, 350? Like, and somebody will pay it? Like, you know? Like, somebody will pay that? But even if Detroit wanted to pay it today, I don't know that he takes it. Like, why would you do that right now? It's just dumb.
Yeah. I don't know why he would sign at this point. Doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense for him to do an extension at this point, unless they do something like that, where it's like they just way overpay just to keep him around, which is possible.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Dodgers will definitely offer him, right? Toronto will offer him. The Yankees will offer him. Like, I don't know. I just don't know, like, how badly they would get eviscerated if they got ahead of the thing and traded him for a huge package right now.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I did just check because I was curious. Tarek Skubal did have TJ, but he had it in 2018 when he was in college.
Yeah.
So,
well, he was a ninth rounder. Yeah.
Yeah. He's 7 years removed from it. And showing no ill effects at this point. So I would have to imagine that he's probably, you know, you would hope he would be fine, but the investment doesn't look like it would be in peril if you were to give him like that huge amount of money. So
no chance.
Yeah. Trade the White Sox would have
traded him with 2 years of control.
Yeah. Probably would have gotten like a Garrett Crochet.
They wouldn't have got to this point. That's for sure. Maybe that's who Dave Dombrowski empties the farm for before he like goes on his merry way.
Yeah, I mean that is possible. He does tend to do that, so I wouldn't be shocked.
I mean, I'm sure Preller would love to, but they don't have any guys left.
Yeah. So yes, Vince Scoobel, ninth rounder, and the only offer he got out of high school was at Seattle University.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is one of those things where it makes you wonder, you know,
why are you spending top five picks on lefties like this?
Oh, come on,
man. Is that what you meant? Is that what you were going to say?
Come on. No, that's not, that is 100% not what I was going to say.
And but, paying him $8 million?
Oh, man. We can move to the Arizona Fall League here since this is being brought up. So Hagen Smith made the start, the second game start for the Desert Dogs. He went three innings, allowed three hits, had zero runs, two walks, and struck out four.
Yeah.
Now, you guys, full transparency, there are four of us in a text message conversation, James and myself, and then Dylan and Elijah. And James,
they blow up. They blow up during the Hagen starts. Yeah.
James was the only one out of the three of us, or out of the four of us, that was not saying what's going on here about Hagen.
Yeah, I saved the good stuff for Sunday nights. I'm not going to waste the whole thing. No, full disclosure, I was just, like, busy and couldn't talk about it. But, like, yeah, I mean, even, like, MLB Pipeline, like, what, they put out something, like, basically calling it, like, a good appearance.
They did,
but,
yeah.
But he's throwing, like, 94, 95 again.
Yeah. You know... So here's the thing. It's not that his numbers look pretty decent. I mean, he only gave up three hits, you know. The whip is a little high because he had two walks to go with his three hits. Again, he gives up zero runs and he strikes out four. My problem here with this whole thing is that his whip's high and he starts at 96 miles an hour in the first, and then by the second inning he's dealing at 93. And I'm just, it's not that, you know, the results are still pretty good, you know, obviously shutout ball is great. I'm just wondering what's going on, you know, like why are these fluctuations happening like this after watching him shove in the playoffs, you know, for,
yeah, because he did get it together. Like
he did.
We started to lay off because he did like start to look like the guy they drafted. And I'm curious to see how many innings they want him to throw. I'm really curious to know like what they actually think, because we're never going to find out. You know, like, so the debate was too, like in the chat, and I don't know where you stand because you didn't really talk about it. Like as far, so yes, like it's two pitches, right? Like he needs a third pitch. The third pitch needs to be better. And one of the people in this group chat, not either of us, basically said that like he should stay in the minors all year next year to like work on stuff, and like,
yeah, that's not gonna happen.
Like I get that, right? But like he doesn't need a third pitch in the minors. Like he's clearly just showed you that. Like, and you know, like you're like the better guy to ask than me on this, right? But my thought is like if he stays in the minors, he's just gonna keep throwing fastball slider because he can. Like he needs to, yeah, I don't know. Like I want to see who the pitching coach is. My guess is he still spends a huge chunk of 26 in Chicago. And maybe that's a terrible idea. But, like, I just kind of think that's what's going to happen here.
Yeah. Uncle Ted, he says righties get him. Righties don't get him. He gave up three hits and no runs,
him.
Dude. Nobody hits him in the
nobody
minors.
Hits him. Yeah.
You said, okay, so maybe they hit him in the majors. Fine. But he hasn't been there yet, so you have no idea. So,
like he probably needs a third pitch to get good righties eventually. Like agreed. Yeah. Like he needs a cutter or a changeup to throw against right-handed pitching. But how about like just like throwing your fastball and slider for strikes and not walking six guys per nine first before I worry about a third pitch? Like how about that? Because you know the people right now that are like, oh, he's a reliever. Well, if he walks that many guys, he might not even be a reliever. So that's the fear. The fear is that he's nothing. I'm not there, but I'm just saying. Like it's not just like, oh, he's a setup guy. Like, no, like he's gonna start and like hopefully he figures it out.
Yeah, he'll do something. I just don't know what it's gonna be yet. And they'll sort out something with another pitch. I mean, he does have a split finger change, which is, you know, is interesting. But, you know, just the thing is that if you're throwing four pitches, not for strikes, in a row, it doesn't matter what side of the plate they're hitting from. He's not throwing competitive pitches.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in the majority of his walks, is that he just seems to lose his mechanics for, you know, like he'll walk the first two batters of an inning. They still won't score any runs, but he is prone to having that happen. And it's,
yes,
you know, that's an issue. I don't know. It's something to watch. Like I said, I'm not ready to, you know, jump off of a building about it or anything like that, but it is something to watch. And it's something that you have to pay attention to. If you're evaluating him, you know, I mean, does that mean they're not going to bring him up to the majors? Absolutely. Probably not.
Yeah. Like Kevin asked, are the walks reason enough to stick more in the minors, or is that forever? It's forever part of the profile, but it can't be this many. Like we talked about this early in the season. Like if he might walk four guys per nine in the majors, even if he's good, you know, cause you're going to have like over 11 strikeouts per nine and he's going to throw 5 1/3. But like there's going to be like one run or no runs like that. That's like it's Carlos Rodon. It's very similar to Carlos Rodon, but it's just a lot of walks, man, like a ton.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. You know, we've seen him lose his mechanics. But the last four starts of the season with the Barons were something that were promising. So,
yeah. And that's, so somebody made a comment about how they're like dropping and like, I don't understand the Schultz thing, right? Like if you thought Noah Schultz was good, like going into the season and you don't think he's good now, like you're not paying attention. Like you're just not like the dude has a leg injury. He's been hurt all year. Right. So like, I feel like anything that happened, I don't really get it. It's like, oh, Noah Schultz isn't as good as we thought. Like, do we know that? Like what? Because like you looked at AAA stats. Like I don't really get that.
Injured AAA stats.
That's what I mean. Like you pitch her all year. And obviously like we're privy to some information that maybe others aren't. But like, I'm not worried about him because Uncle Teddy's throwing because he's hurt, because all these guys are hurt. It's baseball. Like he wasn't injured. When he was injured, he stopped pitching. When he was hurt, he pitched all year because it is what it is.
Yeah, because he's trying to build an innings base, Uncle Ted. That's
and it was
why.
And it's lower body.
If he doesn't throw innings, then next year he's at the exact same spot that he was before this year. And he just had some neat, you know, some patellar tendonitis. So he's trying to work through it and get that innings base.
Yeah,
so that way,
and it's the plant leg, right? So
yeah, it's hard to finish a pitch when you can't land on your leg. So yeah. Anyway, So the bats in the AFL, that's been fun. The first game, not so fun. 0-10 with one walk. But after that, all three guys played in the next game. And then Galani took the day off in the third game. But each one of those appearances in the second and third game, all multi-hit performances. Antonacci. He's had the most at bats, obviously, leading off. First game was 0-5, 2-6 in the next game, and then 2-4, I think, in the next game. He's hitting .267 with a .753 OPS. He's got two doubles and five RBIs. Not bad. Ryan Galani, 3-7, hitting .429 with an .873 OPS and a couple RBIs. And Caden Connor, leading everybody, 4-8. Hitting .500 with a .1143 OPS with five walks and three RBIs.
Yeah, that's good. Does he get to stay when Montgomery is there?
I don't know.
Like a replacement for a temporary replacement.
That's what I assumed.
Yeah.
But at this point, I don't know. But seeing him perform out there is awesome because, you know, we've had guys that we've sent there before that haven't performed at all. So having these three guys, all three of them who are, college draft picks.
Yeah.
So they should technically be advanced, but they're all hitting well. So it's nice.
Well, Antonacci is like a real prospect. you know, like these other guys could definitely make it to the majors, but like Antonacci's what, like a top 12 prospect, like in the system right now. I mean, you just saw what Chase Mydroth did. Antonacci's similar, but his lefty. You know, we could see him fairly early in 2026 too, because like, I don't know. Does he need to play that many more minor league baseball games? Like, I just, you know, I think we kind of know what Sam Antonacci is at this point. But that's funny. I mean, he's going to be a pest this whole time.
Yes, indeed. So we're getting asked here, what's a realistic outcome for Antonacci?
Like a ceiling or just, I mean...
I mean, I would assume like what are we seeing for him in the major leagues? You know, are we looking at a super sub guy? You know, because I mean, probably. Gene Watson and those guys have kind of mentioned Zobrist before, which we've also heard about Baldwin, but you know,
Zobrist had a lot more power. Like, that's the thing. Like, if I knew how many homers he could hit, like, I'd feel a lot, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, is it going to be 12 homers or is it going to be like 3 homers? You know, like, is he my draw? They play different, but they're similar. Like,
yeah, I mean, they're similar and they see a lot of pitches and they got great bat to ball. You know, we saw that they asked Mydroth to hit for, you know, tap into his power a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And in AAA, he did that. And with the White Sox, he tapped into it a little bit more. I kind of have a feeling that maybe they possibly ask Antonacci to do the same thing. I just don't know if, like, you know, like, at what point do you stop trying to, you know, I mean, you can challenge a guy, sure. But at some point, you have to worry about, you know, trying to shove a square peg in a round hole, you know?
Right.
Like, if that's not a part of somebody's game that they normally are going to be, you know, in that, you know, like a 20 home run realm, you know? Like, we said this about Gavin Sheets, you know, asking him to hit for power when that wasn't part of his game. And right. Especially doing it at the major league level is kind of difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I just worry that if it's like very little power, it's second base only on this team, and I feel like they want Mydroth to play there. Like one of the issues is like, yeah, like in theory, if he rakes, like he could come up and he could play third. But like, can you have him at third and Mydroth at second? I don't know that you can. So I don't know. It's fascinating to me. Like, do they choose him over Mydroth? They drafted him. Like, so, like, it's, you know, it's possible. I think he probably starts in Charlotte, right? I don't know why you'd go back to Birmingham at this point. And then we'll see. I mean, he's the kind of guy who Charlotte will be no problem, I feel like, for him.
Yeah. And Adrian asks, where do you think Antonacci fits defensively? Could he play a corner outfield spot? I mean, I think that he could play left field, but I wouldn't play him anywhere else. And also, this is another one of those things where, you know, it's like at some point, you know, if you want him to specialize in the infield and he'll play third base, first base, shortstop, second base, he'll play any one of those four. Do you really want to send him out to the outfield and have to train him to do that as well? I'm not saying that he couldn't. It's just like, I don't know why you'd want to.
Yeah, I need power.
And he doesn't have the power for that. Either.
Yeah.
You know?
That's tough. It's a tough ask.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe you use him to get something else. I mean, who knows? Like they're not gonna keep all these guys. But it's good that he's been successful. I mean, that's an overslot fifth round college pick, and you know, your third and fourth rounders were hurt all year. So, you know, that helps. Like taking McLean and Saki and then Antonacci, and Antonacci's doing what he's doing. It's cool.
Yeah, it's nice to see some positive things going on there, and I don't know. We'll see what happens for the rest of the AFL, and you know, I've gotten some requests to do a 40-man prediction episode.
Whew.
And that's another tough one, but also I think that there's obviously there's going to be some time here that we're going to have to see like what happens for the rest of the playoffs here, and then start making calls on that.
Yeah, I'll do it during the World Series if you want. Just like pull up the roster and do a yay or nay type of thing. Like, because there are some pieces on that roster that are going to be DFA'd like shortly.
Yeah. I would have to imagine that they would probably take care of that sooner than later. And we've already seen all the guys from the minor leagues that we're going to call free agency, you know.
Yeah, and you have all the, like, Jolks is on the roster right now. You have, who's the guy they got at the end of the year from the Marlins to play the outfield, like, for a week? Derek, is it a Derek? I want to say Derek Fisher, but that's not right. I don't remember.
Derek Fisher.
Yeah, that's not right. He's the dirty Laker.
The dirty Laker.
Yeah, he was a dirty player. No, but I mean, they just have Derek Hill, right? Derek Hill.
Oh, yeah,
Derek Hill. So they got all these guys on the 40-man. They're just like really, like all of a sudden the 40-man's at 30, and you're like, oh, okay, never mind. There's no problem. Like, you know, like.
So Beef brought up something pretty interesting that I hadn't thought about before. And I hated his logic when talking about it, but he mentioned that they picked up Derek Hill in late August. If you pick him up in late August, are you really going to let him go that quickly as he's got no options left? Is that the guy that we're going to be seeing as a fourth outfielder?
I don't know. I mean, Does he revert to your minor leagues in the off season? Like, if you outright him, does he stay in the org?
Yeah,
I don't know that anybody claims him.
I don't either. That is an interesting one. Like, I don't think they try and get him back. But yeah, as Trey mentions, he's at least making it to the spring.
I mean, they have a few guys that are like Brian Ramos is out of options, Sosa's out of options. They got a whole bunch of guys where there's some problems. I think Corey Lee's out of options. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much it matters. I'm curious. I don't know what the first, you know, like what's the first roster move, right? Like there's some stuff like a few days after the World Series, I feel like that they have to do. I mean, they'll pick up Robert's option. I wouldn't be surprised if they traded Mike Tauchman, you know.
Pretty positive that Corey Lee's on his way out.
You would think so, unless there's, yeah. Because even if, Ian, cover your ears for this.
No, don't do that.
Even if they were going to like trade an Edgar Caro for something else, right? I don't think Corey Lee's like Kyle Teal's backup. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's probably gone regardless of like what they decide with their catchers. I just don't know. I feel like Corey Lee's future is like elsewhere. I just don't know if you get anything.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's tough. I would imagine that Corey Lee would be gone, but if you get, we always say you listen to everything, regardless if it's something that you even are going to listen to technically, like anything that you're really going to listen to, but you still listen to whatever somebody's offering you. I think that they would have to probably be bowled over to trade an Edgar Caro.
Oh my God. Think. Either of them. I think they'd need a ton to trade either of them. Yeah. But I mean, if you know, it's a pitcher of some kind, like something, but like the way they talk about it though, like it doesn't sound like the manager wants to play both guys at the same time. So that's why I wonder like what the heck they're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, I don't know. It's going to be interesting off season. I at this point, like I've got a bunch of things that I would think that they're going to do, but I don't know. Like, it is going to be interesting just to see who they value enough, or who other teams are valuing enough to give something to pry it out of the White Sox hands.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of guys that I would think that they would get rid of. Like, I would think that they would trade Corey Lee to keep the other two, but at this point, I don't know. So yeah,
for sure. There's some stuff in the comments. So, Adrian, they have 40. Really? So, the thing is with the White Sox right now, like, they have, like, a ton of dudes that are on the 60-day DL. So, all those guys pop back on the 40, and then all the free agents go off. So, I think, like, once the free agents go off and all the 60-day guys go on, they're still at, like, 38 or 39. And we've talked about 5 to 7 guys who were, like, potentially worthy of protection prior to Rule 5. So they will definitely have some moving parts and some stuff to do.
Yeah. Well, that's the Rule 5. I'm getting anxiety just thinking about it right now.
The guys, just the guys that they might not protect?
Yeah, guys that they're going to not be able to protect, guys that they're going to have to get rid of. Like, most of them, I don't, you know, that we're going to have to take off the 40 man. I'm not worried about, but.
And we haven't really got into it, but I mean, I feel like there's a couple, like, to me, like, Tanner and Paulette are easy, like, locks. Like, those two guys, I think you add to the 40 man. And I have a sneaky feeling that they'll add Shane Murphy too, because they think that he could just be, like, one of these, like, up and down at minimum. Like, he could just, a starter gets hurt, he could come up and pitch in the big leagues for you, and it's, like, not somebody that you would, like, want to get rid of. So then the real questions come down to, like, Aldrin, Bautista, Tyler Schweitzer, you know, some. There's a few other names, too.
Mason Adams?
Yeah, well, Adams, I think they have to protect, because he's – so Adams is, like, the perfect Rule 5 candidate.
Totally. Because,
like, they have to
he's protect. Hurt, so they can stash him on the 60-day IL until he's ready.
Right. And then so he pitches a really the rest bad of the team. Year, and then he has options.
Yep. Yeah, this is the thing that, like, kind of gets me all.
I think he gets added. So I would so. If so. So if it's him, Tanner McDougal, and Peyton Paulette, and then I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I you know, I don't know. I assume that that's probably that those guys are probably on, but I don't want to. I think,
like,
that they've
kind of nervous
kinda...
about Aldrin Bautista. That's a really bad team do that.
I'm not worried about Aldrin Bautista as much as I'm worried about losing Murphy or Schweitzer for nothing. Right. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if after the season's over, maybe you see somebody get traded.
Yeah, to a team that would be willing to protect one of those guys.
Right.
Yeah, because that's what like the Yankees and Rays do all of a sudden, and the Guardians, they start trading guys to, like, clear spots, or, like, they make trades before that happens. Because, you know, like, Schweitzer's the type of guy that I could see get drafted in a Rule 5 draft.
100%. 100%. He's got, I mean, the skill level's there. I think it's just a matter of, you know, tweaking.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who had 43 innings of scoreless baseball.
And a team would just put him in the bullpen and tell him to throw 97 on the left side. They'd be like, okay, well, we're going to stash you in the bullpen. Just go down there and throw hard, basically.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
But can you, you know, can you protect 6 guys and add a few vets in free agency and make trades and, like, have enough space to do what you want to do? I don't know. Adrian, I know. Yes,
Adrian,
they could.
Stop
they,
it.
They could, but, like, like, I think there's a better chance that he's in their starting rotation to start the year.
Yeah.
Than that.
If I remember correctly, Trey, the deadline for the roster stuff is November 20th.
Something like it's generally right around then. Yeah, that makes sense. We have to, like, get all your projection in, and, like, I'll tell you this ahead of time. They can get to 40. They can have 40 men on their roster that day. They just need to get under. They just need it to be 39 by the time the Rule 5 draft happens.
Yeah.
I always get those notifications that are like, they can't draft somebody because it's at 40. I'm like, okay, well, they can get rid of somebody.
Yeah. Yes, Adrian, to answer your question, yes, you could. I just don't think that I don't think that's happening.
No, I think they're more likely to trade, like, one or two of the guys that have, like, you've seen that are on the team, like Burke, Cannon, you know. I don't know who this regime is married to that was here before.
Yep. Yeah, I answered the same. I answered this question the other day. Same thing. I said, without having a track record of seeing how Chris Getz is going to deal mm-hmm. with these guys, without having that track record, I don't know how to answer questions about what I expect him to do, because I haven't seen him in that situation before. So I don't really know. And, you know, a bunch of these guys are not his. So it's, I mean, they're his. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's known all of them since they've been here. But, you know, who he wanted there in the first place is another question.
Can you pull up this from Kevin? So he just asked a question like, so that November date, is it that big of a day in terms of what we're going to see in 2026? Or are there still a lot of moving parts? So like both, there are still a lot of moving parts, but that day is very informative, like across the sport, because you find out who every team protects, like on their 40 man, anybody not protected at that point, that's Rule 5 eligible, you know, then basically you could take in the Rule 5 draft. So last year on that date or the day after, there were articles written about like, hey, these are all your best guys available in the Rule 5 draft that happens in December. And one of those guys was Shane Smith. That was like heavily talked about. And he was one of the names that me and Ian talked about on this show and others did. And that ended up being the guy that the White Sox took. This year they have the second pick in the Rule 5 draft. So, you know, I don't know that they're going to get like two guys that are as good as the two guys they got this year.
Could you imagine?
That's like a miracle, you know? But I mean, look, I think you talk to Gene Watson or some of these guys, I think they expect to get a guy that can help them for sure.
Yeah. So they had three guys that were on a Rule 5 guys, Vassell, Gage Workman, and Shane Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Gage Workman was the one that didn't work out. The other two stayed on the roster the entire year and were very productive. So, and I'm also going to go ahead and say shame on you to Just Baseball, part of our media, who we are a part of their media group, for not adding Shane Smith into their all-rookie team. Come on now. Seriously? Like, he's there. He's not there. Yeah. And then they put, what's his name, from the Yankees on there. Negative 0.4 war.
Schlittler? Like,
no, he was good. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember what his will something. Maybe
oh,
will
yeah,
something?
Yeah, 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 yeah. They got the other
yeah.
guy. Yeah, yeah.
He was like, he had like an extra run on his ERA. And
yeah, Shane Smith was like legit good.
Yeah, I don't get it.
So when that date happens and the Rule 5 list comes out, is the guys who the Brewers leave unprotected, like, your first thing you're going to do?
If what?
Like, the guys who the Brewers leave unprotected, is that the first list that you're going to scour?
I mean, if it's pitching, yeah, probably.
Yeah,
if it's, yes, Will Warren, that's who it was. Yeah, I don't want an infielder from him.
No, I think they'll take a pitcher. I think that's another pitcher, yeah. But, yeah. I mean, think about where, like, who we've talked, like, who do they rely on, right? Well, you have David Keller with the Mets. You have Josh Barfield, obviously, was with the Diamondbacks. Brian Bannister's kind of been all over the place. You know, any Orioles for Will Fuller. They've picked up a lot of Brewers. Walker McKinven, I think, has a lot of influence.
Yeah, it would seem that way. And his guys are bullpen guys, so or pitchers. So that makes sense. I would 100% not be surprised if they went out and grabbed some of the pitching. I would be surprised if it was a hitter.
Yeah, it's going to be harder for that guy to make the team.
And I also don't know that there's going to be a guy that's going to be Rule 5 eligible that would necessarily be worth it from their system. Like the guys that they've got in AAA and stuff, like, yeah, they're okay. Like, right. Some of them are okay. It's just not, you know, I wouldn't think that it would be somebody that would stick for a year.
Well, I'd have to go back and look, too. Did anybody from, like, the most recent Rule 5 draft, other hitters that stayed on teams all year and made an impact? Like, I don't really know, you know. Like, you know, I'd have to go back and look and see if somebody mattered. I mean, maybe the best Rule 5 pick ever was Josh Hamilton.
Roberto Clemente would
oh, yeah,
beg
true.
To differ.
Yes, Roberto Clemente.
But yeah, no, I don't know. I'd have to, I think that that should be, when we go with this, when we go and we talk about the Rule 5 draft, I think that we should go back and comb through some of that stuff and answer some of those questions, you know?
Yeah, because a lot of times it's like catchers and utility guys. Those are the guys that stick.
Yep. Oh, yeah, Johan Santana as well.
Yeah,
he
is a good one, yeah.
Yep. So another argument that was going on about this MLB all-rookie team is that some White Sox fans were upset that Jacob Wilson got the shortstop spot over Colson Montgomery. Your thought?
Jacob Wilson's awesome.
He's good. Yeah. He's good, but...
Who was the third baseman?
What's that?
Who was the third baseman?
It is Caleb Durbin, who's been okay.
So put Montgomery at third.
I mean, you could.
He played games there.
He did, yeah. But I mean, like the one that people were really complaining about was the Ramirez from the Marlins winning the DH, despite the fact that Colson Montgomery did not play DH at all, but his numbers over Ramirez, his numbers are way better, and I would rather stick him in that spot, but they did not.
Right, you can even argue for Kyle Teal there.
Yeah, you could. As Trey says, please like the stream. We appreciate that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think anybody's going to beat Nick Kurtz, though.
No, he's probably the first baseman.
I would think that he's probably rookie of the year this year, huh?
That was a good pick by the A's.
Yeah, it worked out all right. Never going to pick a wake first baseman, but that one worked out all right.
No, he, pretty good. What happened to Jack Kags, though? Not good.
Weird, huh?
Shocker. That's,
Imagine. Development is needed, and that chase rate is still there.
Yeah,
he does hit the ball hard, though.
Andrew, like, asking him to play the outfield?
Oof. I mean, if you remember when we had Joe Doyle on, and we mentioned him in the outfield, was it Joe Doyle or was it Carlos Collazo? I can't remember.
I think it's Collazo, yeah.
We asked if he could play, if he should be in the outfield, and it was met with laughter.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and Carlos was the one, too, who said, like, he's personally not as high on Kags, but since he works at, like, a publication, you know, it's kind of like us. They add all these guys up, and then they end up, like, where they do. But he's kind of one of those guys who wouldn't normally take a first baseman, but he also, like, wouldn't switch that guy's position to justify taking the guy, you know? Like, it's like, okay, well, just you're drafting the bat, basically.
Yeah. So Kevin's asking, you guys got anything planned for the next couple of weeks for the off season? Is next major news date November? I mean, we talked about doing like a 40-man like prediction type thing, or just like combing through that in the Rule 5 at some point. So that's in plans.
Should have coaching news at some point.
Yeah, there will be some news. Just not exactly sure when.
there's stuff. I mean, is Instructs over?
Nope.
No, it's not, right?
So, yeah, it's still going on, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe we can get somebody on that's like seen the White Sox Instructional League team. I mean, there's guys that are super interesting that are there, obviously. Like, some of the DSL guys are there. Billy Carlson and Fosky are there, and their draft picks and stuff. So, I'm sure there will be some stuff there. There will be, like, more prospect stuff. The playoffs are going on. We'll figure it out. We can do an hour a week. I think we can probably fill an hour a week. We'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, we've got enough information and stuff to talk about that we can do at least, you know, some of the time, and then you guys are all in here too, and you guys help us steer this thing, so we appreciate that. Are you good, James? You ready for me to walk this thing out here?
Doug, why would that one be better? Why is that ideal?
Huh.
Doug said ideally the Elijah and Dylan one would be better for the 40 man.
I see how it is, Doug. I see how it is.
How about we both do it? That would be, you know, do it on each show. And not tell each other.
Yeah, well, that is definitely true, Doug. I agree with that.
Grant Umberger, that's Ian's guy. What MVP? Else here before we leave? Yeah, we'll be good. I think we could pop on and just take questions from you guys and get an hour.
Uh-huh. Okay, Doug. Interesting. Interesting comment, pal. Appreciate that. All right, so that's it for this week. You guys have been watching / listening to the Future Sox podcast. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can find us every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on YouTube and the Purple app. You can also find this podcast along with all of our written content at futuresox.net. If you are looking for White Sox prospect highlights, you can find them on X at Future Sox, and now also here on our YouTube channel. If you love the content and want to support us here at Future Sox, there is a link to our Patreon in our channel description and at futuresox.net. You can also toss up a super chat on our YouTube stream. Also, don't forget to like this stream and subscribe with notifications so you know when we're going live while helping us in the World Wide Web algorithms. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox, and he is James Fox at JamesFox917. We appreciate all of you. Thanks for listening and commenting in the chat. We appreciate you guys. You guys are great. Have a good one. We'll talk to you guys next week.